Starbuck. I didn't need correcting.
Shut up!
Order!
Order! Let's start off as we need to go on.
We can see a better future.
So it's not a competition who can shout the loudest.
Hello and welcome to the Left Wingers podcast, a podcast made by youth activists for youth activists. This week, you're joining us on another episode of Whinging Wednesday, where I'm joined by my co-host, Ashan.
Hi, Kathleen. Happy to be joining you again for another exciting Whinging Wednesday, where a lot's happened in the last week.
I was about to say, we're not going to have time to cover everything that happened this week, but we're just going to touch on a few things. So I think the big thing we should talk about is, of course, the Conservative reshuffle. So we've been hearing rumours about this for a while, but my most interesting thing that I heard was Nadine Dorris doing a piece to camera on Talk TV that she's going to stand down at the next election, and Lee Anderson, or 30p Lee as he's more currently known, becoming the deputy chair of the Conservative Party. Quite astonishing stuff. I think they'll have to now be a reshuffle in Labour just to balance out, just because they've broken up a couple of the departments. But I'm very happy that Nadine Dorris, and I'm sure everyone else is, moving on to bigger and better things outside of British politics.
Yeah, I mean, I'm quite shocked that they moved Lee into the deputy chairmanship. I know it doesn't actually mean anything because it's not a cabinet position, but it's still interesting to see how his attempt to control the party means he has to bring someone like that into a role of seniority. Also, it was interesting was they made a whole load of new departments. One of them being like science and technology and innovation, and a few other ones which I can't think off the top of my head, but definitely a bit of, I suppose, trying to rearrange the furniture but not actually doing anything important type of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was going to ask you about this because obviously you work in science and technology, but or you're studying at least, and you'll probably go on to work in some kind of scientific field. I'm not too sure that actually was a good idea. There definitely is a strength in having departments that deal with different issues, but I think actually science would have been better off under business, energy and trade. They should have kept science innovation within that bracket, because you kind of want it to be within, if you're a smaller department you get less resources, and although you're trying to show that it's important, it wasn't, I think by having it in a bigger team with more resources and a bigger budget, that would, of course, be helpful.
Yeah, although I'm a bit torn. I feel if they actually made it a senior department in its own right, then I think it would have been fine. They've kind of just split up bays, really, which means that surely, as you mentioned, the money's going to be split up a little bit more, and sort of there's no like big push behind it. It's sort of its own little thing. Which isn't great. Anyway, so it was interesting to see how they put in Michelle Donnellan, who famously, if I'm not mistaken, was the shortest serving education secretary, and also managed to get a pension from it. So she's doing well. But I will say we do need to focus more on it, especially one of their first announcements in the last few days was the big push for the UK Space Agency to be a bit more independent from ESA. And how they're putting £6.5 million into growth projects in the UK space industry. And that is great. But still, I know a friend who recently was in Brussels for work with ESA, which is a European space agency, and they're outplaying this by miles away. They're literally in space, and we're still on Earth with our first spaceports opening only this year. So we are a long way behind. And that's an example of it. So it would be interesting to see how that develops.
You're literally planets behind.
Exactly. Exactly. Light years away, you could say.
Joke of the day goes to Sean. Fair enough.
Yeah.
Ed, just to get back to the point, I mean, I completely agree. We have to, clearly, I think there's a need. And, you know, the scientists that create the vaccine, I would love to see Britain become more of a scientific leader in the world. There does need to be a lot more investment, and especially investment not just to Oxford and Cambridge, but across the UK, and that's to other major universities as well.
Even in regard to that, I saw one of the most interesting that I saw was because of the whole sort of NIMBYism in sort of local government at the moment, and that's kind of been a big trend in the last 10 years. Obviously not a direct result, but one of the results is that lab space in the UK. So if me and you wanted to build a lab for our startup, for example, mm-hmm. it would cost double as much to rent that land in somewhere like Oxford or Cambridge or in the Golden Triangle than it would anywhere else in Europe in their equivalent sort of Golden Triangles. So it's a combination of factors that is going to stunt our scientific growth, so to speak. So a lot needs to be done. But that was something I read recently.
Wow, I actually didn't know that. There you go, guys. NIMBYs ruining lives everywhere. Yeah. Everywhere we go, NIMBYs are attacking. On the note of NIMBYs, actually, one of the things we did want to say was we're actually looking to do a series, as we did last year and the year before, on young counsellors that aren't NIMBYs but are YIMBYs. Who are standing that are listeners to this podcast. So if you're listening now and you know of somebody running for council that's under the age of 30, which actually, would you believe, in terms of politics is actually really young, please let me know and let's get them on this show because we want to hear from them. And that's something we do every year, which is talking to young people, how they get into politics. But obviously this is a show for, this is a podcast for younger people. So hopefully that will kind of inspire more people into local politics. One of the things we're also going to mention is by the time this recording comes out, Keir Starmer would have done a speech, which hopefully will be this morning, depending on when this episode goes out and when you're listening, on the Equality and Human Rights Commission. And the top line here is he's going to tell everyone that while the Labour Party, has successfully moved away from the process of relying on the EHRC and has implemented the recommendations, it's actually a moment for reflection and not a moment for celebration, which I think is something that both of us and everyone on the left wing just can get behind. We all lived through the Corbyn years and we are definitely aware of the major issues and problems that period caused. And it's great to see that we're now finally beginning to come out of that message, and hopefully we'll never be at a stage where the party management is like that again.
Yeah, there's not much I can add to that. But I will be listening intently. And if you guys have any thoughts on what he says or any experiences you've been through, we'll be happy to hear from you.
I mean, a very important thing. And then, of course, another big speech tomorrow. Sian, what is it about?
So Yvette Cooper will be announcing, re-announcing Labour's policy on crime and tackling antisocial behaviour. So the top line is basically that 1.1 million instances of antisocial behaviour were recorded. And that's quite a lot, as well as the sort of cutting of police funding and police numbers since 2010. There's just general sense of unease. And I suppose if you look around in all walks of life, I know people I know think, nothing's working. The buses are late. The trains don't run. And one of those things that people think doesn't work is crime. Oftentimes people just get a crime number and they feel like the issues aren't being solved. And particularly in communities that are sort of tend to be, I suppose, left behind, that's particularly more prevalent. And so Labour's policies are bringing loads more extra police and punishing offenders with tougher sentences. So it's a bit sort of harking back to the Blair years, so to speak, but we'll interest to see how that develops.
One of the things, the question that I always have with, I mean, the Home Affairs brief is so challenging, but one of the comments I'd make would be, I think there's a question to be raised as to whether police numbers actually solve the problem, because you have so many. I think I read a stat the other day that over 1,000 police officers are under investigation in the Metropolitan Police. Now, if you think of those are just the ones under investigation and not the ones, not the ones that haven't been found yet, for service of, I think, 44,000 police officers, one in 44 is actually quite a staggeringly high number to be under investigation for serious offences. That could be anything from misconduct all the way to sexual harassment. So I'm not necessarily, I would want, and the Met are definitely the worst, the London Metropolitan Police are the worst, but I definitely would want to see some kind of improved process for recruiting, hiring, and then verification of police officers before they come through the course, because there must be, either they change their behaviour, they come in as solid, sensible people, and the process of training a police officer really changes their values and changes their behaviours, or they're just rotten apples to begin with, in which case we need to find better people. And I think, it's all well and good to say, well, we can just put 2,000 more police officers on the street, but if women don't trust the police, which I can say my friends definitely don't trust the police, I'm not really too sure if I do either, to be quite honest with you. If we're in that situation, I don't think necessarily adding 2,000 people in uniform is going to help. And then if so, most of the crime that currently happens, is unfortunately online, or it's you know, unfortunately, online banking or buying things online or things of that nature, and having a physical Bobby on the beat isn't really going to do too much to help.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on the whole. But I would also say, I think it's a bit more holistic as well. I think because the way police departments have been treated, as in underfunding, sort of stripping of a brain drain almost, where the smartest people or the best people in the police sort of leave because it's not worth their while anymore, because it's unpaid, overworked. It does just mean the people coming in through the bottom are also going to be not the brightest of the bunch. Mm. And sadly, by that, we mean rapists, racists as well. But that being said, not all police, people who work in the police are like that. I know my auntie works in West Midlands Police and she has a lot of good stories she has every day, but equally a lot of bad ones. So if there are any young people who are into criminology and ideas like that, we would be good to interview you maybe on how your police culture is, or if you're working in the police or working with police, it'd be good to hear a bit more positive and maybe the negative on what's going on.
Yeah, definitely. And I think crime is one of those things that we've definitely began to notice more and more. It's something that I've began to notice more and more. I think there's no way an incoming Labour government, this is definitely on the to-do list. And I don't think that, unfortunately, the problem isn't simple, so the answers won't be simple either. I'd be interested to see what Yvette comes out with, and I'm sure we'll cover it next week as well on the podcast.
Another big thing that's happened this week, Monday morning, after much anticipation with a fresh website and lots of ominous tweets and briefs to the lobby journalists, Labour released the GPC, the GPC files, which is the government procurement credit card files, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
And it basically called out the Tory government for what Labour claim is excessive and stupid spending on government accounts when they should really be trying to save money, or so they claim they should be trying to save money. Me and Kathleen were a bit miffed with it, to be honest. It seems like a bit of a strange attack line, because although in some cases there is money being wasted, I know Priti Patel claimed £5,000 in a bouncy castle or something bizarre. A lot of the cases do just seem to be like getting stationery for a department or hiring a hotel or buying a bottle of wine for a dinner, which doesn't seem too bad to me. But Kathleen, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm definitely torn on this, because these cards came in under the previous Labour government, but I think they've definitely been exploited. And nobody could convince me that buying a bouncy castle is going to help strengthen ties with the European Union and or one of our many trading partners or one of our future trading partners. But there definitely has to be a code of conduct between the civil service and political spads, or some kind of understanding of what I think the cards itself is a useful thing. People should be held accountable for what they spend, but there's got to be a tracking process, and you can't just hand out cards. I'd be interested to see what happens. I know in consultancies and kind of public affair facing roles, you know, people are given expense accounts, but you know, you do have to keep track of those, and that's something. I think it's a little bit different when it's a private business, because you can make profit and loss. But I think when you're spending taxpayers' dollars, I really would exercise caution over how and when they're kind of able to do that. They're definitely, you know, I can definitely tell you that deals have been done and, you know, business agreements have been reached, and nice lunches and things like that are really helpful, and writing a nice thank you card, absolutely. But there's no reason to be spending a certain amount of money on bouncy castles. I think I read another one which was equally as stupid. You know, there's just no reason to be spending that money on it. And especially when you look at the NHS in crisis, you look at several departments, as we spoke about the police earlier on in the podcast, they need more funding. I think it's very difficult to then justify spending, you know, £600 or £700 on something very frivolous when it really doesn't make too much. Let's not forget, it takes on average 7 to 10 years to do a trade deal. You know, how much is a bouncy castle going to really help with that? I'm not too sure. So I think you are definitely a lot of exercising of caution. And this is just another, I think the GPC files are so interesting because it's just another thing that the government are incompetent at. It's just another every week now there seems to be another story of incompetence. And the Labour messaging, I think, unfortunately for this, was a little bit too in the bubble. And it didn't penetrate, I don't think, the outside kind of the wider UK. But I'd love to see as much, you know, FOIs up to the nines, everything you can do just to make sure that we get as much truth about where this money is going, because I think people deserve to know. And it just adds to that kind of Rishi Sunak's incompetent, the government is incompetent, they're unable to spend money properly, you know, they're wasting taxpayers' money. I think things like that, it definitely adds to a bigger narrative that the Labour Party have been building. Was this the most effective stunt I've ever seen? No, it wasn't.
Yeah, full on agree. I think what it actually ended up doing was, I saw Angela Rayner on LBC, or some news channel, sort of doubling down on it. And what it ended up doing was sort of going, well, didn't you buy AirPods on expenses or something ridiculous? And that's just it's just that idea where, because it's so, as when you explained it quite well, and people who are listening will get it. And, oh yeah, that's the right thing for Labour to do. But if you're trying to be snappy and go, look how crooked these lot are, it just ends up painting everyone badly, or painting no one at all.
I think you could claim AirPods as expenses, actually. Like, I'm happy to admit that. We live in an online world. Everything's online. Yeah. If you need to zoom in for... I don't think I'd particularly struggle with that. If you bought 25 pairs of AirPods, then I'd have some questions.
I think my point was the AirPods. Yeah. I think that they're just bringing up stuff to try and fling mud back at Labour. I think it's...
Yeah, and everyone can do that at all parties, because there's so many people and there's such a budget. But one of the things that I've kind of consistently campaigned on, and thing that I really believe, is that MP staffers' allowance comes under MPs' expenses. It's not an expense to have a staff. You need a staff. You can't not have a staff. Every MP needs 3 to 5 people that work with them full time. You cannot be an MP. You cannot be a good MP. It's just impossible to do the work. One person to do the work of 5 people whilst voting. Even the most inactive MPs still need staffers to deal with things like casework. So it frustrates me to the nut, just unbelievably frustrating, when I keep reading about these huge expenses. It's like, well, it's not actually a huge expense because you're employing 5 people. And I wish IPSA or the government or whoever's in charge of it could just change the name and just clarify that. Because I think people, it's one of those things, if you took a mic and you went into the centre of any town or city in the village and you said, do you know your MP is spending 300 grand a year of your taxpayers' money on expenses? People would be like, oh, like that's terrible. Like, I can't, you know, and they literally would think that you go to a bar and you spend 300 grand a year. That's literally what they would think. But that's not the case. £250,000 of that is probably in staff costs, pensions, you know, sick pay, or, you know, all the things that any employer needs to have. And then on top of that, you've got computers, you've got printers, you've got 2 offices, one in the constituency, one in parliament, you've got travel fees. It's so ludicrous that IPSA haven't kind of identified this as a problem and sorted it out. And on top of that, on one hand, we're saying, okay, well, these MPs have too much level of expenses, their expenses too high. But on the other hand, we're also saying, well, IPSA didn't pay staffers enough and they were supposed to get a raise, hopefully in line with inflation. They haven't even got half of that currently. So there you go. Then once again, you've got staffers who are being blamed for their MP spending an absurd amount of money, but they're actually 9 times out of 10 not. And then on top of that, you've got them claiming for bouncy castles. It's just like, it's just insane. And clearly the system just needs to be really clarified. And please, like, I'll keep saying this as someone who used to be an MP staffer, please stop saying that it's expenses or allowances. It's just to have a staff. You need to have a staff. There is no either or. I just wish that they'd kind of...
Yeah, well, I don't know how... I agree with everything you said. And staffers are notoriously underpaid as well. So...
Absolutely. But if you just go into the centre of any town and you'd say, like, oh, do you know your MP spent 300 grand this year? You'd be like, what? How? Who are these people?
Yeah, people always want more from their MP as well. But when they actually break down, oh, the expenses needed to have perfect caseworkers or really good community outreach schemes or whatever, you know, it all does add up. So I think it's a bit of populism by certain people. I think both sides use it. I know people love doing it to Labour MPs, but at the same time, I know Labour people who do it to Tory MPs as well. Mm-hmm. At the end of the day, most people who aren't even Tory staffers working constituencies are doing good jobs trying to help people as well. So it's we've got to obviously sort the system out, clearly.
Yeah, I just think it needs to be clarification in terms of terms, because I just think it doesn't pass that, like, normal people, doesn't pass the average Joe test, because obviously people think that these MPs just spent hundreds of thousands of pounds, and then it adds into a narrative of politicians being lazy and unfocused, and in this case, it's often similarly not true.
Similarly, I would argue, we were talking about young councillors earlier, I would say we should probably pay councillors more. I mean, if you want young people to get involved, let's say you wanted to become a councillor full time. I know it's quite rare to be one, but it would only be 15k a year, which even as someone on minimum wage, you'd earn more working full time, which especially in this climate means becoming a councillor gets reserved for people who have either a fat pension to sit on or already wealthy or have got some sort of benefit system in the background to help them. And so It's one of those things. People want more from their politicians, but never want to pay them. But we might sound a bit out of touch. I don't know.
No, I don't think we do. And I'd actually even go further than that and say I actually think NEC members should be paid as well.
I don't know enough about that, but yeah, sure.
So, but here's my argument with this. So I think we should pay councillors for, I don't know, a certain wage. That could be decided. That could be just like IPSA decides for MP staffers. There should be an external body that's regulatory that decides that. NEC members often sit, I think it's once a month, they sit in meetings for 8 to 9 hours a day, essentially on Zoom calls. And some NEC members do more and some do less. Here's my problem. If you want to become a candidate, if you want to get involved in Labour Party politics, it's the fact that you're not paid, is it? And they ask so much out of you time-wise, makes it so difficult to access politics. And I don't think, you know, I think it's perfectly fair to give them an average salary. I don't think people shouldn't be getting into politics to become millionaires. But if you want to make a difference, you should do it in the knowledge that your basic needs are being provided for. And whether I definitely think there should be an average salary given to MP staffers, party staffers, anyone who wants to become a councillor, mayoral, like people that are running for things, because it's already it's such a tough thing to do. And then on top of that, NEC members are expected to have full-time jobs and families. Like, how can that be? And then it often isn't. So then it kind of bends its way to people that maybe work part-time or have wealthy parents or, you know, things in the background where it just makes it harder for a younger person or somebody not involved in politics to run.
Yeah, I also think as well, agreeing with that, that if you are someone who's very talented and you could go into, I don't know, a really important role in the Labour Party or the private sector, we're missing out on a lot of talent as well. Because, you know, at the end of the day, most people want to be comfortable no matter how much they care. So
You've got to pay your bills at the end of the day. And I think being an NEC member should be a full-time job. Yeah. It really, like, they should say, like, please leave your job. Please do this for 8 hours a day, because you're making, the NEC make decisions. Essentially, they are the National Executive Committee. They make decisions on everything from candidate selection to plans for the next general election to party staffer strategy to, like, everything they decide. They go through so much and their briefs are so big that they should be paid full time to do it. And the terms aren't very long. They're 2 years. Oftentimes people just, you know, do their 2 years and then are voted out again. I think it would be a lot smarter to have those people. It's only 8 or 9 of them working full time for the party, especially in a run up to an election. It seems like ludicrous that you'd have a board of a nationwide company and expect every board member to have another job, another full-time job to pay their bills and to do this in the background. Like,
you want your party to be the best of the best,
exactly. Like, if you think of a football team, you know, the board that sit on Aston Villa are paid to do that. They don't have full-time jobs, and then they do Aston Villa in their free time. That is their job, to be a board.
I don't want Aston Villa to do well because I hate Aston Villa.
Well, I mean, that was just an example, but you can insert. Sean, what's your team? I never asked.
Birmingham City. So we're playing tonight. My brother and my dad are at the game, so hopefully they do well.
Brilliant. Unfortunately, that's all we've got enough time for. We are recording this on Valentine's Day, and trust me, everyone's got plans. So thank you for listening. We really appreciate it. Please download, subscribe, share, tell your mum about it, tell the dog about it. You can find us on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, and on Google Play. We'll see you next week, but I'm going to leave it to Ashan.
Keep whinging about Matt Hancock stationery supplies, and we'll see you next week.